This is The Week in Addiction Medicine, a podcast resource of timely news and top stories brought to you by the American Society of Addiction Medicine, ASAM.
Today is Tuesday, April 2nd, and I'm Claire Rasmussen. Our lead story this week, Epigenome-Wide Association Study on Methamphetamine Dependence, is in Addiction Biology. In this study, subjects with methamphetamine dependence, as well as age and sex match controls, had an epigenome-wide analysis of DNA methylation and identification of sites where methylation differed between subjects with methamphetamine dependence and controls. 13 regions with differential methylation were found. Of particular interest was hypomethylation of the CNOT1 and PUM1 genes, leading to alterations in mRNA metabolism, similar to those seen in bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. These changes relate to symptoms in common, such as psychosis. Our next study, in the International Journal of Drug Policy, is titled, How Have Cannabis Use and Related Indicators Changed Since Legalization of Cannabis for Non-Medical Purposes? This study examines trends in use of cannabis for non-medical purposes and related indicators from pre- to post-legalization in Canada, 2018 to 2022. Past 12-month cannabis consumption increased among Canadians from 22% in 2018 to 27% in 2022. Legal purchasing increased from 4% in 2018 to 69% in 2022. Next is a study in JAMA Network Open titled Prison Buprenorphine Implementation and Post-Release Opioid Use Disorder Outcomes. This cohort study involved over 15,000 adults incarcerated and released from prisons in Massachusetts. When buprenorphine treatment began to be offered during incarceration, post-release buprenorphine receipt in the community increased, accompanied by a smaller decrease in naloxone receipt. When stratified by sex, the authors found there was a small decrease in post-release all-cause mortality in the male cohort. These results suggest that offering buprenorphine during incarceration might improve treatment receipt during the critical post-release period. Our next study, in the Journal of Addiction Medicine, is titled Patients' Perspectives on Discontinuing Buprenorphine for the Treatment of Opioid Use Disorder. In this qualitative study, the authors interviewed patients who had discontinued treatment to understand why. Reported reasons include logistical hurdles, such as beliefs about high hurdles to return to care after missing appointments or frequency of visits required. Rule violations were also a reported issue. Final barriers include medication effects and the desire to return to opioid use. Next is a study in the Journal of General Internal Medicine titled Addressing Opioid Use Disorder in Primary Care. The authors note the history of primary care and principles used to manage other complicated chronic medical conditions also apply to OUD. First, just as the medication first principle providers would swiftly initiate medication for severe hypertension, these providers should also initiate medications for patients with OUD. The second principle of supporting medication with behavior interventions and referral to specialists when needed also applies. Finally, the third principle, utilizing patient narratives to inform care, is an important component of treating patients with OUD. A new article in the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs is titled A Perspective on Psychedelics as Treatment for Addiction. This perspective piece reviews work in the 1950s and 60s that started following the discovery of LSD, as well as recent research developments driven by recent studies of neuroscience, as well as the rise of MDMA use in psychotherapy and the emergence of ketamine as a treatment for mental illness. The authors urge those working with botanically derived psychedelics to learn from the extensive knowledge available from indigenous groups who have used psychedelics for spiritual purposes. Next is a study in The Lancet Psychiatry titled Establishing a Research Agenda for the Study and Assessment of Opioid Withdrawal. The authors note that withdrawal is frequently cited as the reason that people continue to use opioids. The authors also see considerable inconsistency between the many opioid withdrawal scales. For example, the authors note that insomnia is not part of 60% of the most used scales, and few scales have had psychometric analysis to establish validity. The authors outline 9 areas for research, including how do withdrawal symptoms differ for different opioids, how other substances affect withdrawal, research on precipitated withdrawal and its treatment, and the development of biomarkers for opioid withdrawal severity. Our final article in the Canadian Medical Association Journal is titled Navigating the Nuances of Canadian Guideline Stance on Selective Serotonin Reuptake Inhibitors in Concurrent Alcohol Use Disorder and Mood or Anxiety Disorders. This letter was written in response to the recently published Canadian Guideline for the Treatment of AUD. The guideline states that SSRIs should not be used to treat depression and anxiety in the context of AUD, citing a lack of quality evidence supporting their use. The authors feel the studies cited for increased drinking with SSRIs are not convincing due to small sample sizes and conflicting results. The letter's authors suggest that SSRIs be continued for patients who have benefited from them and encourage continued monitoring for benefit or harm. This concludes today's episode of This Week in Addiction Medicine. Subscribe to the ASAM Weekly for more exclusive news and our editor's commentary delivered every Tuesday. Be sure to check us out on social media and asam.org. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.